Bem-vindos ao Conversa Mais Pública, o podcast da saúde mais pública. Nesta série de 3 episódios, vamos falar com vários investigadores do Laboratório Design and Health do Politécnico de Milão. A conversa irá decorrer em inglês.
Podcast Conversa Mais Pública.
Urbanization is one of the 21st century megatrends. 55% of the world's population currently lives in urban areas, and this is expected to grow to 68% by 2050. This trend impacts human health. Public health here has a unique opportunity to shape the environments in which people live, making them more health-promoting. Such participation may include evidence production and appropriate communication, advocacy towards decision-makers, and joint and multidisciplinary technical work with groups that conduct urban planning. The Design and Health Lab is part of the Department of Architecture, Built Environment and Civil Engineering of the Politecnico di Milano in Italy. Their vision is to use the architectural project as a driver of social, health, economic and environmental needs to improve the well-being of the population through an application of scientific research as a tool for innovation. Their main areas of work are the study of the relationships between the built environment and public health, the design of innovative and efficient hospitals and healthcare facilities able to promote health and well-being, and the development of scalable tools to assess the quality of healthcare environments in making strategic choices with evidence-based approaches. In this episode, we will start by defining urban health and its determinants, and then focus on walkability. First, let's hear Professor Maddalena Buffoli, who is an architect with a PhD in maintenance, rehabilitation of the building and urban systems, and that will also tell us a little bit about her tool to assess the urban health aspects of urban plans.
Urban health is something that means that all the policy have to improve healthy in all program. We know that also in the past urban policy have a direct effect on health, but in the past it was different, because in the past we have got a lot of hill that was connected to the infectious disease. Now it's very different because the urban situation has changed, and now we have different risk factor. And the main problem are non-communicable disease. So urban health try to define some strategy or action that can improve health, trying to work on individual behavior, on pollution, on physical activity, on walkability. So are many different action that all together can improve health on the people that live in urban cities. It's not an objective of only doctor, it's not an objective only of urbanistic people or technical or local health agencies, but we have to work all together to improve the health.
Can you tell us why is it so important nowadays then?
We know that there are so many non-communicable diseases that are improving so much in a city context. We know that almost of the death in the world are connected to non-communicable disease in urban context. For example, we know that in city context there are people that are very sedentary and don't do a good level of physical activity. But we know also that there are many environmental risks like pollution, and these all together can improve so many different non-communicable diseases, like obesity, like diabetes, like cancer, and these are the main cause of death. So we have to do something for it. And I think that we have to start from programming a new healthy city. We have also to think that the pandemic situation have underlined the critical situation of our cities, because people need outdoor public space, need more green public space, and need a place where can do a walk, and the cities are not resilient for this.
Basically, until now, we've seen the problems that are inherent to the urban space. But what is the difference between urban and rural areas? In other words, what is the attributable burden of disease to the urban environment?
There are different studies that underline that in the city there are an increase of non-communicable disease, and they're directly connected with the design of the city. So in a rural context where there are more green spaces, more opportunity to do physical activity, and also where there are less problem of environmental, like air pollution, or also like problem connected to the climate change, because with more green we haven't so many problem of heat and of heat islands, and also less problem connected to the storming and the water management, and the more connected with the nature have a good physical and mental effort. We know that there are also benefits in the city, because we have more opportunity, more also the accessibility of health is bigger in the city, and we have got more economic opportunity, or also educational opportunity. So in the future, we know that almost 70% of people live in a city center. So we have to think that the city can't be in the future like now.
The fact that just for living in a rural area, you are more healthy, even if you don't have the same access to opportunities, you have probably a smaller level of education, a smaller level of income, but the environmental context you are in play such a big role that just for living in an urban area, even if you have a better income or better education, it's probably that you will have a poorer health. And that I think it's a really important take-home message.
Yes, we have to do a sort of difference between the real rural context in the middle of the nature and the peripheric context, because there are two different situations. In Turin, there is a good work that underlines that in the city center, the health is better than in the peripheric situation. So the peripheric situation is something where we have to improve health, because maybe there are in the proximity of the green rural spaces, but they also have the bad things of the city.
What are the main areas of determinants of the built environment?
For these questions, I'd like to speak about a new tool that we have done with my department and with the help of local health agency of Bergamo. We worked together to do this kind of urban health tool, and we have done a very big literature review before, and we test a lot of indicators in the city center, and we define this tool that is made of 20 indicators. This 20 indicator is divided in six main areas. And these areas are environmental quality, that include all the environmental aspects like noise, like air, and we have got a solid and a subsolid. That means that the land and the use of the land is very important. And we have got another main area that is sustainability and the hygiene of the built environment. This is because if we speak about the city, we have to remember that in the city, yes, we have got the urban green space, we have got the path, we have got the walkability that we have to improve, but we have also to understand that for the future, the building are very important, and we have to think about zero energy building, about sustainability building, about building that can contrast climate change, and also building that can work for the health of the people that live inside or work inside this building. Another main aspect is urban and social development. Especially during the last year, we know that the proximity of the services are very important. So also the density and the proximity of services, the mix of user are an aspect that is very important for the behavior, for the social inclusion and for well-being of the people. Another main aspect is about mobility and transport, of course. And another one is about outdoor spaces, grey spaces and green spaces. So,
can you briefly explain to us what are grey spaces?
Grey spaces are like a plaza, like a big street where people can walk, but not only walk, also sit down, make relax, do a sort of sport, but not in green, real green spaces.
For this matter, I remember that once you explained to me that when we are building, even if it's for good purposes, like a public place for socialization, for example, when we are building, we need to be careful that we are going to be adding some impermeabilized soil and that we should still be careful to allow the water to go somewhere, for example. Can you explain better what that balance is and how can it be achieved?
We know that one of the big problems that we have got after climate change is the rain and is not the normal rain, but the some days where there are a lot of rain, and our big problem is that our water system is not enough to guarantee a good situation for all the city. So we need something that can contrast for some days this big quantity of water that go down to the city. And one of the first big solution is green spaces, because they natural take the water. But not only green, normal green spaces, but you can also work with some strategies like rain garden, like some area that can be
flooded.
Yes. So we can project a new part of the city, trying to be resilient from this typical climate change effect that we have.
Who can use the tool that you created?
The direct people that can use the tool are the person that work in a local health agency and that have to evaluate the urban project. In Italy we have a law that say that all the new urban project have to be evaluated from local health agency. So the people can have an instrument to evaluate it. But in the second times, I think that the instrument is a very good instrument also for projectists and also for designers that have to work on the urban plan, because they know what are the effects of the strategies that are trying to do in the program. If you know how the local agency can evaluate your project, you will try to do better for the evaluation. So it's something that go in both directions. And at the end, the tool, the final evaluation of the tool, is a sort of urban health level of the project. So that kind of graphics can be very useful also to communicate how healthy is the program that group want to build.
So also for transparency reasons, for example. Yes. I would add the fact that it might also be useful to also monitor the levels of urban health of the projects and the plans that go on. See if we are getting better with time, and also maybe for research purposes, I would say.
Yes, sure. Maybe for monitoring we need more time. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can start to monitor it in some years, because now the project, the tool is applicated by the local health agency of Bergamo and the local health agency of Milan. The same tool is online in the Italian health ministry. So I think that maybe in the future also other cities can use it, and we can have a sort of monitoring and also to compare city to city.
People from different backgrounds can use the tool, but what is the geographical level to which the tool can be applied and why?
It's not good to evaluate all the city, but only a part of the city that interested by a new reprogram, new regeneration, a new active plan.
What, in your opinions, are the indicators that influence human health the most?
The indicators that have main weight are urban green spaces, are walkability, also solid and water management are very important.
But you touched the point that I would like you to explore a little bit more, which is the difference between green spaces, because green spaces are not all the same. Some of them may have parks, some of them may be a forest that you cannot use.
Yes, it's difficult to explain because there isn't a law that explain in a good way the difference of the green spaces. Also in the European community, there isn't a classification of the green space, urban green spaces. Normally in Italy we put a difference between the public urban green spaces and the private urban green spaces, and also from the specific functional green spaces. Specific functional green spaces are, for example, scholastic urban green spaces, cemetery urban green spaces, or also like the urban green spaces that are close to industry or yes, the new idea of the city of proximity underlined that is very important to have in 15 minutes an urban green spaces.
And here we are talking about the 15-minute city, right? That is, yes, a concept that you talk a lot.
Yes, this idea was born in France. And now, after COVID-19, we improve this idea because we understand that it is so important to have all very close to the people where they live.
What would you say is the priority nowadays in what comes to urban environment problems?
For the future, we know, especially after COVID, that we have to make a healthier city. Also in Sustainable Development Goals, we know that the European Community underline that all the cities have to be more inclusive, safe, resilient and sustainable. So we know that we have to do something, and we have to do something now.
In order to deepen the topic of walkability, we talked to Professor Andrea Rebecchi, an architect that for his PhD developed an assessment tool for cities' walkability, with the aim of supporting urban planners and decision makers improving active transport and physical activity in urban areas.
First of all, what do you mean by walkability?
I think that walkability is related to both walking and cycling opportunities of the built environment and of our cities. I mean, walkable environment, it's an urban context that allow and promote the adoption of healthy lifestyle and encourage the adoption of choices related to healthy urban moves. So not only sustainable urban moves, but healthy.
So maybe here we are talking about the urban aspects that promote walking. But are we talking about just walking for transport, or also about physical activity, and not only physical activity, but also physical exercise? And for that, I mean walking as a way to promote your health when you do it consciously.
I think that nowadays the strong challenge is to promote and to design, since we are architects, a urban environment that is capable to offer different occasions to attend our city through active transportation choices. So we usually refer to all the walking experience, also for entertainment, but also to the urban moves caused by reaching the jobs places, the sport places, the entertainment places, and so on. So not only walking for physical activity and jogging, not only walking for reach the destination, but every kind of experience that we can take in our city through walking and cycling choices. We call them healthy urban moves.
How can this be measured?
I think that it's very important to try to assess the walkable environment. We have several experiences in the European country and several tools that are capable to measure in a qualitative or in a quantitative way the capacity and the capability of the built environment to promote and to encourage the adoption of active transportation choices. Some tools are really qualitative, some other are strongly quantitative. I think that the best way is to merge the two modes, because it's important to take in consideration the quantitative aspect, more related to all the collected data that our cities are capable to show nowadays with different tools and digital instruments. But also, as architect, we should take in consideration the qualitative aspect that are not easy to measure, but are strongly important, because observational issues and perceived quality of the city, like, for example, identity, quality of the material of the ground floor of our city, and also the functional mix of the destination that we could reach in our city, are really challenging to force this attitude of city users to have walking experience in the urban context.
When you talk about quantitative measures, what are you referring to?
The most common quantitative is the walkability index. The walkability index is strongly related to data of functional mix, for example, data of frequency of destination in the different period of the day and in the different period of the year, But I think that these quantitative measures are very important also because they are systematic, but there is a limitation because are just data and we should interpret this data. And these data are caused by different reasons, and sometimes there are some mistakes inside the data. So for example, the functional mix of the city should be considered not only as the major function of neighborhoods or places, but we should go in depth and understand the feature of the ground floor, because the ground floor is the place that affect the attractivity of the city.
So here maybe we are talking about the three main indicators used for this index, which are usually the residential density, the land use mix, which you already talked about, and last, the connectivity of the streets. But then you said it's important to also look at the qualitative aspects of this space. What do you mean by these qualitative aspects? Can you give us some examples?
I'm mainly referred to, for example, the active environment of the ground floor, the recreational environment, the density of destination, mainly related to the adoption of healthy behavior, for example, the food destination, the commercial and the social destination. Another important aspect is the which one related to safety and security of our city. And in terms of safety and security, we should take in consideration, for example, the furnitures, the materials that we use to design and construct the public spaces and in general the outdoor spaces of our cities. So the speed reducer, the fancy, the formal or informal street crosswalks, but also the topic of lighting. And we should take in consideration the lighting in the nighttime, but also the shading system or the green components of the city that could allow to have a shaded area in which we can walk and cycle. Last but not least, the comfort of the urban environment, for example, the sidewalk and the cycle lane width and the connectivity, and the wayfinding system that allow the city user to understand where we are and where we can go in a safety way. But also, it's important the cleanliness and the maintenance of the urban environment and the outdoor spaces. And finally, another aspect that it's very, very qualitative, but I think that it's also important in the same ways, is the aesthetic features. And the aesthetic features, I mean the imageability and the overall street condition and the overall building condition. Also because the identity of a place is very important, try to force the attractivity of that places, because most of the time people, city users and communities walk and cycle more in the urban environment that has got a precise identity.
Your tool basically puts together all these qualitative and quantitative aspects, trying to assess the urban environment in terms of walkability in a comprehensive way. Who can apply this tool?
I think that the tool is mainly oriented to designers, but also to policy and decision maker. Of course, to use the tool, it's necessary design skills, mainly for the qualitative part of the tool. It's necessary to have confidence with all the issues that are very technical that characterize the urban environment. I think that the public health expert has a strong role, not in conduct the assessment, but in analyze data. Also because, like the health city manager experience, all the experience related to the multidisciplinary of the people involved in in the urban health planning processes, the public health expert and the physician in general, the epidemiologist, should have a challenging role in compare the data coming from the population health status with the assessment that architects and urban planners conduct about the features of the cities. So, definitely, I think that public health experts are not enough to conduct the assessment, but they have a very important role to compare data. And I think that this is the most important expression of the multidisciplinary that characterizes the urban public health experience that we should conduct in our city or in the future experience of healthy urban planning.
I know that you have applied this tool to assess some areas of Milan. Can you talk to us about that experience and what were the main results of this case study?
I think that the most relevant results are that the functional mix and the reach in terms of destination is strongly important to affect the healthy urban moves. Another aspect that it's really problematic for the city of Milan is the which one related to the street section of the city, since Milano is affected mainly about the car-oriented street section. So the car slot are very spread. Most of the time are not controlled and not well planned. The connectivity of cycle lane show a lot of lackness, so there is small connectivity, yes, and there is also a cycling network that present a lot of situation of discontinuity. Another aspect is that most of the streets are not characterized by green lanes, for example, and this is a problem of urban heat island effect, mainly in the summer months. One of the best features of the city of Milan is the diversity in terms of transportation modes. There are a lot of alternatives about public transportation destination, and so this feature of course is very relevant and has got positive outcomes in terms of connectivity without the private vehicles.
Do you think these strategies that you told about that you told us about are cost benefit in what comes to health outcomes?
Thanks for this question, because this morning I read a sort of divulgative paper news about a research that has been conducted in the north country of the Europe. I think that it was in Helsinki, and they assess and they evaluate that €1 put in planning and architectural design and transformation of the city save 3.40 euros in terms of cost saved by the national care system. Because yes, it's true, urban planning intervention needs a lot of public money, but at the same time we can save all the cost by the national care system that are put to solve and to care all the communicable disease. So I think that overall the cost-benefit approach in the recent experience has got finally a positive balance at the end.
Thank you for listening. Bibliographic references for this conversation along with a conceptual map are available in our webpage. We would like to thank all the team of the Design and Health Lab for participating. Este podcast encontra-se disponível no website saudemaispublica.com, mas também pode ser ouvido no Spotify ou no Anchor. As referências bibliográficas e mapas conceituais referentes ao tema do mês estão disponíveis na nossa página. Se gostaram do nosso podcast, sigam todas as novidades no nosso site, onde podem fazer subscrição da newsletter, e falem de nós no Twitter, utilizando o nosso hashtag PodcastS+P. Se quiserem ouvir sobre um tema específico ou um convidado particular, digam-nos no Twitter ou por e-mail. Obrigado por nos ouvirem e vamos continuar a tornar a saúde mais pública.
Podcast Conversa Mais Pública.